There were about 1,000 people there. There were the blacks, the Asians, the coloreds, the Afrikaans and the English, all of them living together under the same roof for 5 days in Grahamstown, which is the town where Rhodes University is. We had other representatives from around the world, and included among them was Margaret Mead. She's an old former classmate. I mean, she's a few classes ahead of me, at any rate, at Barnard. It was interesting to see the mutual aspirations of all women. At first, there was the tension, you know. Anytime the Asians or the blacks or the coloreds or even whites got up and spoke about injustices with respect to women, the Afrikaans would say, not true, this is an attack against the government and so forth. And they were about to walk out, and one of the young Afrikaans women said, Miss Watson, would you come and talk to these women? They respect you, and if you would just talk to them. We do not want them to walk out because this is too important. Those old biddies will be gone in 5 years. We've got to hold our people together, the women together. And I said, yes. Interestingly enough, the conference was held in the Museum of the Coelacanthus. That's an old Stone Age fish that was found off the coast of Cape Town or somewhere, which I thought was sort of significant. But we got them to talk and to understand. And my position was that no matter what your differences are, recognize one, this is a unique opportunity. It's the first time in the history of your country that all elements of your society have gotten together. But above all, you have one thing in common, and that is that you are women. You are concerned about the quality of life. You are concerned about your families, education, health. And that is the one unifying thing. It's up to us to get it organized. That is one area. In Cairo, it was the same thing. They wanted to know how best to utilize their talents to raise the level of their women. And there's some women who were in very primitive areas. But that does not mean that they don't have something to offer if they're given the opportunities, because they are concerned about the education of their children and raising the level of society. The same thing in Khartoum. And around the world, they're all looking to America because they say, you are the leading lights. What are you doing? What kind of advice can you give us? And I have, in my humble way, tried to give as much advice as possible within the limits of my limited experience. But I've also pointed out that we are not perfect, that we have had great strides to take, that we have had our failures. Then no one can do it for us. Each one has to do their own thing. Each one has to offer what they have. I cannot offer it for you, and you cannot offer it for me. But above all, it requires knowing who you are and believing in yourself. Now, many women don't want to do that because it requires them getting out of the cocoon and standing on their 2 feet, and it's much too comfortable. Interestingly enough, what is happening in America is women are being forced to get out on their own, and for a very interesting reason, economics. That even if they're married, the woman's salary is equally as important to them as the man's for maintaining a certain level of living. The cost of living has gone up. You have to pay for increased cost for your education of your children. And everyone wants a better life for their children. And this means that you've got to have better opportunities and educational opportunities. And now, gone are the days when only the man can work and afford to give all these opportunities. And this is requiring the contribution of the woman. And in so doing, this is opening up her horizons, and she's recognizing that she can have a career. I think it's rather interesting that not so long ago, one of our great companies, Campbell Soup Company, I don't know if it appeared in this area, but it sure appeared up in the Northeast. There was an advertisement on television, and there was a man in the kitchen busily stirring a pot of soup, and he said, "Oh, he must hurry up and get supper ready because his wife is coming in shortly from work, and she always likes tomato soup." And then the next scene, you see the wife coming in with a little attaché case, and he's greeted fondly by her husband. And then the next scene is they're sitting happily next to the fireplace, slurping their tomato soup. Well, do you realize the significance of this? The dramatic change. Because years ago, it would be the wife fussing around, waiting for the hungry bear husband, who would go and sit, flop in his chair with his asking for his slippers and waiting for the dinner to be ready. But now there is a recognition that there are dual roles and a coordination of roles between the men and the women. I've always said that, and this was the topic of my speech in South Africa, was female liberation and human survival. Because when women are liberated, so are the men. They are no longer put into a, locked into the prism of a role. Why can't men cry? Why can't men go in and cook a meal if they like? You are helping them to develop their own potentials, just as you are helping yourself to develop your own potential. The other aspect of the change, of course, is the whole new aspect of relationships between men and women. And many women are getting married. And there isn't the rich daddy who will give them the weekly allowance and say, "Dear darling, go travel around, buy yourself pretty baubles." No one has that kind of money anymore. So the only way that you're going to survive is to be able to work and to develop your own talents and get your own education. And so we're finding women being released in this area. They're going in for careers that are far more interesting. They're not related to teaching, which is the traditional thing. They're going in for engineering, architecture. There was an article just recently which talked about by some top medical educationists who said by sometime in the 1980s, one half of the medical doctors in this country will be women. And interestingly enough, these were men incidentally, they said that America will have better health care than they've ever had before because women care about service. The numbers who have enrolled in dental schools have increased 497%. So I think that we're on the move. We've just got to maintain this momentum. We cannot now afford to step back three steps as we have in the past. We've got to do it on all levels, on education, on political action, taking part in the political system, voting, running for office. You heard that just recently a 73-year-old lady, the little old lady with tennis shoes, is now the mayor of Raleigh, North Carolina, and the man said, nobody's going to pay any attention to it, and then she whipped them. And it all depends on what you believe. Do you believe in yourselves? And you can do anything that you put your mind to as long as you believe in yourselves. And only you can do it. And when you do it, you serve as an example for others, and then comes the surge of power, the nuclear power that women have to offer. I'm sorry, I've talked much too long, and I'm open for questions. Thank you.
Very, very inspiring. And I'd like to know, I'm sure Ms. Watson would entertain a question. If anybody,
yes.
Has a question about perhaps what made you leave the government in 1974?
Well, what made me leave the government in December 31st, 1974? These are the political exigencies of life. I was a political appointee, and I serve at the present pleasure of the president. And it was determined that this is a part of life which one accepts, and I was very happy to accede to this determination that they would like to make another appointment, and I resigned in conjunction with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, the Fulbright scholarship was a part of the exchange, of the cultural and educational exchange program. Let us say it is being, nobody really quite knows, it's in the process of being changed over. You know, there is this new agency formed, the International Agency for Communication. I'd like to ask myself about that. But this is really something quite new. I must admit I've been out of the country most of the time. They're still in the process of changing over. I think there are still some questions of where does this program go? Does it stay in the department or does it go with this new international agency? And I must admit, frankly, I haven't found out because I've been away most of the time. Yes. What do I think about the illegal alien? My dear, you're not up on the latest nomenclature. It's undocumented workers. This has been a matter of great concern, and as you are aware, the president put forward his program on the undocumented workers. This, and the name was changed largely because there was concern about the nomenclature, and this impacted on our foreign relations, particularly our bilateral relations, particularly with Mexico. There has been, this was never a concern as long as our economy was strong and going full speed ahead. And as soon as things changed a bit, then there was some concern. And there's usually the old scapegoat mentality. We'll blame it on this one or that one or the other. There was also some question as to whether how many illegal aliens or undocumented workers. And we frankly do not know. There's speculation. We talk about so many millions, 6-8 million and so on. We frankly do not know. That is the ballpark figure. The question then came up, how does one deal with this? Does one then go and round them up and just push them over the border or push them out into the sea, wherever they come? And they not only come from Mexico, they come from many parts of the world, I can assure you. Central America, the Caribbean, Latin America, the Far East, the Philippines, Africa, the Arab, Middle East, and India, and so on. There are those, since we had no internal controls, and this has been, you must remember, the basis upon which this country was founded was freedom. That you were getting away from all these constraints of being documented and thought of as a number. That they could trace you wherever. There was no such thing as privacy anymore. So the only thing that we in our country have had is a border control. And that is determining who comes in and who goes out. But once you're in, there's no way of that you still have the same freedoms for which we fought. And the foundation on which this government and this country was based. Now, do we, the powerful, rich, generous nation, take all these millions or in whatever number and say, out? And there was this concern that this certainly would impact on our foreign policy and in our role of leadership in the world. And so the president came down with a proposal that all those who had been here and living continuously who arrived prior to January 1, 1970 would be permitted to come forward and adjust status and become permanent resident aliens because they would have been able to prove that they have been contributing members of the society and have, but for the fact that they didn't have the permanent resident status, and that those who came in between January 1, 1970 and December 31, 1976, or January 1, 1977, would be able to come forward and register and would be able to stay here for a period of 5 years and work. They would not be able to bring in their families, but they could go in and out to visit their families. They would not be stopped from that point of view. And then those who came in after January 1, 1977 and who had violated the law would then be subject to all the provisions of the law. This was felt to be a fairly equitable way. Then there was a question of those employers who hired illegal aliens and had a pattern of doing this. And largely, many of them would pay them under the prevailing wage scale, that they would be subject to sanctions. Whether it would be criminal or civil was still a matter of debate. Now, all of these things will have to be debated and determined by Congress, because Congress has plenary jurisdiction over immigration, who comes in and who leaves this country. There are certain basic decisions America will have to, or this government will have to determine. There's a group that says, let's pull up all the walls and let's go back into severe isolation and keep them foreigners out. Of course, they fail to recognize that they are the products of foreigners and that the great strength and vitality of this country came from the infusion of immigration. Many of our great advances in science have come from people who are, quote, foreigners. But all of us are foreigners. There's only one native, and that was the Native American, the Indian. But this may be a philosophical thing, but I think that the philosophical aspect must be factored into whatever decisions we have to make. And this is something that all of us have to recognize. We cannot be narrow-minded in our operation, in our view. I don't know if I've answered your questions. But any other? Yes. Oh, have you all heard the question? She has heard that the State Department is very conservative with respect to their view of women, the role of women, mid-level entry and higher level. And what is the view of the opportunities for women? I must tell you that maybe it's because of me, but I think largely it's because of all of you. That attitude has dramatically changed. If you've got it, they want it. They're looking for brains, and they're recognizing that women have a very important input to make in the whole foreign service established and the foreign policy. You're having a tremendous increase in the number of women who are coming in. And they're in law, they're in economics. God knows everybody needs to know about economics, especially America, because that's one of the major aspects, and in politics. The Director General of the Foreign Service is a woman. She was a former ambassador. That's on the highest levels. But they are coming in mid-level. I'm sorry, I don't recall the percentage, but a large percentage of the women who are coming in are entering into the junior officer levels, but they're also in the mid-levels. We find them as consul generals, principal officers, and political officers. We have a woman DCM. I don't know if you know that appellation. It's the deputy chief of mission. We have two or three of those. We have economic counselors and political counselors. So it's dramatically increasing when before they were so rare and so few. So I would definitely say come in. I think I'm going over my time. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you.